Welcome. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. You're listening to Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Today in studio, I have with me David Donaldson, the CEO of the Atlanta Healing Center, and we're going to talk about heroin. I know it's been on the news. I know it's been quite a concern for us in the addiction treatment field for a number of years, but I think with the death on Sunday of Philip Seymour Hoffman, that it has brought again to the forefront the difficulty that we are having with people being addicted to heroin. And so I thought we'd spend a little bit of time today talking a little more specifically about this drug, why it's so appealing, why people get into trouble with it, and what we need to do about helping. So welcome, David. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. It's definitely a subject that's been on my mind quite a bit, and in particular this past year with all the celebrities we've lost due to heroin specifically, but also in the sense that it really ups the ante when it comes to addiction. You know, when we talk about addiction is a deadly disease.
Yes.
There's not been, in my experience in recent times, a substance that has really made that more true. I can remember back in the early 2000s, late 90s, when a lot of the club drugs that were out there were
right.
were killing people really quickly, but that kind of went away for a long time. And now with heroin, the chances of overdose and the deaths that are happening are really raising the stakes yet again.
I think that's absolutely true. We know that people can get drunk and have a car accident and die. We know that people can take too much methamphetamine or too much cocaine, have heart attacks, strokes, and die. We know that any drug has the potential to put the user in a potentially dangerous and life-threatening kind of situation. But with heroin, every time someone uses it, they really are playing a type of Russian roulette in terms of you don't really know how strong the heroin is. You mm-hmm. don't really know what it's cut with. And you also don't really know how much you've been taking. So if you use the same amount that you used last time, that may or may not be enough to kill you.
Yeah, it's one of the substances that really is unpredictable for somebody when they're taking it. Because part of the allure of addiction initially for many, many people is the predictability of I can take this substance. I know I'm going to get to this level of
right.
euphoria and life is going to be incredibly wonderful. And then it's going to come back down to where I was and life mm-hmm. is fine. There's none of that predictability when it comes to opiates in general and heroin specifically.
And it's very frightening, and because of the rapid tolerance that people develop when they use heroin, they move rather quickly to IV use as opposed to other drugs that they may take, and I'm talking about opiates now, but other pain medications, they may take them by mouth for a while. They may take larger doses. They may go to a more potent type of substance. They may snort it. It's a long time for most people before they go to IV drug use. But with heroin, that's not the case. It's often we see within a couple of weeks of starting snorting or smoking heroin that people are now using a needle, which brings about another life-threatening kind of risk, which is HIV, hepatitis C, diseases, and potentially severe medical consequences, whether you get a deep venous thrombosis, whether you get a severe infection, all kinds of things can happen every time you use.
Mm-hmm.
And just before we started today, you were mentioning something about the allure of really strong drugs when you were talking about how people sometimes are even attracted because it is so risky, because there is this ritual.
Yeah. And a lot of the articles that were out this past weekend related to the celebrity death talked about how when somebody dies, drug dealers know they're going to have several more customers come back to them based on that one death, because the addicted brain thinks, and they refer to this as edging. I'm going to get just up to the edge and be the one that doesn't die because I can handle it. And the reality that they cannot predict that. But their brain is saying that must be incredibly amazing stuff. And I've got to get out there and try that because look how much it did to this person.
Right. And the other piece of this is, again, because tolerance builds so rapidly with heroin, what you find is that you have to keep using more and more to get the same high, or eventually to just keep from being sick and in withdrawal. But the lethal threshold does not keep moving. That level at which you're going to be taking this substance, sometimes to get high, sometimes to keep from being sick, people are edging up to and crossing over the actual lethal dose.
Mm-hmm. And dying.
And dying. And it's just terribly frightening. A friend of mine, Mark Publicker, who is the editor for the ASAM Journal, the American Society of Addiction Medicine, and a member of the ASAM Patient Advocacy Task Force, put out a statement this morning talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman's tragic death, but it's putting a face on something that has been ignored and that I know, David, you've been very concerned about, and that's this batch of killer heroin that we're seeing. There's a lot of publicity about Mr. Hoffman's death, but there 2 weeks ago, 22 people died in Pittsburgh alone from this very lethal
combination
of heroin and fentanyl, which is a very powerful pain reliever that's often reserved for people when they're in surgery. It's a really potent, powerful thing, and when these two are combined together, it's resulted in a number of deaths. 20 deaths in Rhode Island the first 2 weeks of January. Overdoses have quadrupled in Maine and doubled in Vermont. Dr. Publicker lives in Vermont and has been very, very concerned by what he's seeing amongst his patients as they are taking this heroin. So he's very hopeful that that patients are going to have a face and a name now. Mm-hmm. Related to the heroin deaths, and putting out another interesting call, which we can talk about maybe towards the end of the show, but the idea that many insurance companies are now cutting back on the amount of treatment. Different states are now no longer offering medications that or covering the cost of medications that would help people with particularly opiate addiction. And that he's seeing more and more of his patients not being able to get the medications that they might need to help them because of bureaucratic snafus in different states as they're trying to save money. So it's pretty crazy, but this killer batch of heroin that's responsible for at least 100 deaths across the country, and this was an article that that you had actually given me, David, regarding what was going on with this so-called Theraflu.
I can remember a few weeks back that you would hear patients talking about they've got some bad heroin and that people are dying because of bad heroin. And so it was real interesting when the news actually started coming out and people started talking about what really was there, that it wasn't bad heroin. It was this combination that they've come up with of heroin mixed with fentanyl. And suddenly it shifted from this warning of caution, be careful, they have some bad stuff out there, to more of a provocative feeling with it, with the sense of this has got this combination that's going to be make you so high. And this article in particular was where it was talking about drug dealers being really okay with having a few people die because they would know that that would bring in so many more clients because of the intensity of this stuff. I was reading in another out of because I think there's been like 5 states now that
yes.
have had this this experience, and a center in Ohio that had their first recorded death related to this combination, and places across the country are now starting to gear up for a lot more admissions and a lot more fatalities because of the allure of edging with the substance.
And the substance that's being added, of course, is the fentanyl, and this particular brand, if you will, and believe me, they do brand, this particular brand of heroin laced with fentanyl is called Theraflu, which when you think about our usual thoughts about Theraflu is that it's a medication that you take when you have the flu. It's been given this this jazzy name that identifies it and makes it highly.
It makes it something that they can talk about in songs.
Right.
They can put it in rap songs. They can talk about it in front of their parents, and their parents have no idea what they're talking about. We all had that kind of cool language when we were kids talking about the things we were doing. Because they're calling it Theraflu, they're calling it Bud Ice, and making it norm.
Right.
Part of what we were talking about in an earlier conversation was how society normalizes things and how it makes it less impactful.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can take something as deadly as a combination of heroin and fentanyl and call it Bud Ice, you know, you don't even think of that as a particularly heavy beer. You just
right.
think of that as something that they serve to the 21-year-olds. And so it gets minimized and attractive.
Right. And the allure of these names that are given makes it so that you can post things on bulletin boards. You can send out a text message. And we know from talking with our patients that drug dealers are very sophisticated these days. And when they get a new shipment of something in, they'll send out blast texts or blast emails to their quote, customers about what they've got. And when you use names like this, somebody looking at that text or reading that email wouldn't think anything of it. So it's, I think that it's dangerous, but it's important. And for our listeners, I think very important for them to begin to understand this whole process of how drugs are used and how drugs are marketed and how we need to be much more aware of what's going on in our family members' lives. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about heroin and how it has such an appeal. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Michael Gannot with the Middle East Research Center Limited, bringing you Insight to Israel, the truth about the greatness of the Jewish state and its struggle for sovereignty and security, every Sunday at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. You're listening to Detailing Addiction, and today we're going to talk about heroin. It has been in the news. It has been something that we have been very, very concerned about, and with the death of Mr. Hoffman, who is a well-known and very talented actor who's performed in over 50 movies over the 25 years of his acting career, a very versatile and talented individual who actually had a history of being in recovery. He had a number of interviews in 2007, 2008, where he talked about being in recovery for 22 years. And apparently over the last year had a relapse, had been admitted to a detox unit, and had been struggling. In fact, he had been in Atlanta 3 days before his death working on the sequels to The Hunger Games, and people had there's photos on the internet showing him kind of passed out in his seat on an airplane, and references to him being looking very bad and being engaged in drinking alcohol while here in Atlanta a few days ago. So, I guess if there's something good that can come out of this, I hope that it is more and more people are going to become educated about what the problem is with this drug. And right before the break, we were talking about how this is marketed, how this how the word gets out, and how killer heroin can actually be a drug dealer's dream in terms of drumming up business.
I think what's so powerful about his story in particular and for a lot of people is how the transition from recovery to active heroin addiction can be so subtle.
Yes.
For somebody that has 22 years of in recovery, and I don't know the full story, and I'm not talking like an expert on his story, but my understanding is that he got some pain medications and then escalated from there. And we hear that story so often.
Yes.
that I was taking some Vicodin because I had infection, and the next thing I knew I was taking 4 Vicodin when I should have only been taking 1, and the next thing I knew I was taking Percocet. And the transition from 4 Vicodin to a Percocet to heroin now has become a really, really easy transition to make. And people don't necessarily think they're stepping out of recovery when a doctor gives them a script.
Right.
Because they have a legitimate illness or they have a legitimate back pain. And they don't necessarily recognize that part of their brain where addiction lives is getting tantalized and reactivated by those pills, even if they have a legitimate reason for
right.
using it. And the path from there to full-fledged addiction and to a place they never, ever dreamed that they would go can be so quick.
And you've brought up an important point, because I think most of the time when we think about heroin addiction, we think about young people, late teenagers, early 20s. But we have seen, and we're seeing more people like Mr. Hoffman in their 40s, in their 50s, that have had some clean time, then go out, whether they got pain medicine or whatever, they got their brain reintroduced. And we're seeing these, forgive me, middle-aged heroin addicts for whom this has never been their drug of choice. They're not relapsing back to their long-lost heroin addiction. They've never used it before in their lives. And often that's not even their primary
addiction. Yeah.
They were much more interested in cocaine or methamphetamine or prescription
alcohol.
And they're being introduced either by their dealer or legally by their physician providing them with medication.
And I think that so many people just don't get that for an addict, the reaction to an opiate is different.
Yes.
You know, because when regular people take Lortab, it stops the pain. It makes them feel a little better physically. But they don't get euphoric.
No.
They don't get this sense of, wow, this is wonderful. Give me another one. I want more. I want to feel more and more like this. When an addict gets it, it may or may not stop the pain, but it makes them feel so wonderful that they will change their entire life to do whatever it takes to keep doing that.
That's so true. Many times I've worked with patients managing acute pain, and often they're very grateful in the beginning when we give them pain medicine. But over a couple of days to even a week or so, I'll begin to hear, I can't stand this stuff. It makes me stupid. My brain is foggy. I have no energy. I feel depressed.
I can't go to the bathroom.
I can't go to the bathroom. I hate this stuff. I would rather feel a little bit of pain than feel like this. This stuff makes me feel awful. But as you say, the person who has the disease of addiction, their experience with this drug, as with many other drugs, is very, very different. It is not a sedating experience. It is a euphoria. It's increased energy. It's a feeling I can do anything.
Even when you describe to them what the normal symptoms are, you know, if you were to say it makes them itchy or it makes their stomach upset, their response would be, yeah, I know I would get that, but that's okay because then I know that the good feeling is coming next. And they're going that euphoria that the addict brain gets that the common people aren't getting is right behind those other symptoms.
And I think that's a very important point because I'm sure there are many people reading about this very successful man, top of his career, Academy Award winner, blah, 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 lives the high life. How in the world could he find himself in this place? And it's because his brain manages drugs differently, and heroin is a whole nother drug by itself.
But just a step across the line. Once your brain is reactivated, and a line that's so easy to step across. One of the things I was looking at talked about how years ago the average age for a heroin addict was 30s and 40s, and now what we're seeing is the average age is in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a real shift because
yes.
Once upon a time, heroin was such a dirty word.
Right.
It was a taboo word and one that only the hippies down in
Haight-Ashbury
or Little Five Points or someplace like that would be using. But now it's in the suburbs. It's in college campuses. It's in everywhere.
And there's not the end-stage addiction feel. When you see the folks that our friend Dr. David Smith treated in the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic, like you say, these are 30, 40-year-olds. These are folks that have been using drugs for a long time, and they finally get to heroin. Mm. With young people today, they don't think anything about it. It doesn't have the stigma. It doesn't have the scariness that it had in my day.
Doesn't have the taboo that once upon a time you would hear from needles.
Right.
It used to be you could say, have you ever done heroin? And the person's reaction would be, oh, my gosh, I would never do needles. I hate needles. Now it's like, oh, yeah.
And I hear many of our young people say, oh, I don't even like needles, so somebody else does it for me. My boyfriend, my dealer, my neighbor, somebody.
Well, they look away.
Somebody does it for me. There's not that fear that there really should be about how dangerous this drug is. I think that the progression to this drug is an interesting thing, and the idea that young people are getting involved pretty quickly with heroin, I'm sure many folks are stepping back going, now, why would that be? Why would a young person find themselves in the situation that they're now down at the Bluff in Atlanta buying heroin? Mm-hmm. How does that happen? And I think the normal progression that we see is they get some pain medications, usually not for themselves, although occasionally we'll see someone who's an athlete or someone who's had their wisdom teeth out and they've been given pain medicine, but mostly it's a recreational thing. They borrow grandma's cancer pain medicine, or they find something in the medicine cabinet, and then they start taking it. They find they like it. Getting it begins to be a problem because it's so expensive.
Yeah, and that is pretty much across the board. When I'm sitting and talking to a patient about why it is you made the step from pills to heroin, the response was it was cheaper. And a lot of them will talk about how drug addiction, drug dealers have become a one-stop shop. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can go to the same person for marijuana or for heroin or for Xanax or for whatever you want. And so they would get established with a particular supplier and be very, very content with Roxy's. And they get there, and lo and behold, he's out of Roxy's today, but here's some heroin.
Right.
And they just step right across the line, and the addiction is fully taking over. And a lot of times when they're trying to break away from it, they will still want to hang on to marijuana because marijuana was never their addiction in the first place.
Right.
It was just something they used to relax. And the person that they continued his stay in relationship with for marijuana is supportive, and I would never want you to go back to using that stuff. It almost killed you today. But tomorrow or 2 weeks down the road when he thinks that you're nice and relaxed and comfortable, here comes the heroin again.
Right, right. And when you think about the cost of Percocet, oxycodone, OxyContin, on the street it's $1 a milligram. Mm-hmm. $1 a milligram. So a 10-milligram Percocet, one pill, is $10 or so. And if you use it over a period of time, one, Percocet is not going to last you for the day, and it's not going to get you any bit of a buzz, so you got to go to 2 and 4 and 8 and 10 and 20. And pretty soon the price is so high. When you think about the cost of the heroin found in Mr. Hoffman's apartment, they estimate it $6 a bag. So for $6, most people can get their fix that lasts at least for a few hours. So the price differential is tremendous, and people get to a place where their need for the medication is so much greater than what they can afford.
Yep, even when they have the ability to afford.
Right.
It escalates that quickly.
And it can be very difficult, and as more and more doctors are being educated about prescription meds, and more families are trying to take precautions in locking up their meds and counting their meds and all of these things, we're seeing that actually prescription drug use is going down, but the use of heroin is going up. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this problem called heroin. Thanks for listening.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Hi, this is Kate Copsey inviting you to listen year-round to America's Homegrown Veggie Show every Saturday at 10 a.m.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank here with David Donaldson from the Atlanta Healing Center, and we're talking about heroin and the great concerns that we're having because of the nature of this drug. Now, in New York City, where Mr. Hoffman died, heroin deaths rose 84% in 2 years. They actually seized in the Bronx before Super Bowl 33 pounds of heroin. Now, pounds. I'm talking pounds of heroin here, with hundreds of thousands of branded little baggies, the $6 bags, stamped with NFL. They estimate that this was probably worth about $43 million. And that was being prepared and appropriately labeled for revelers coming to watch the Super Bowl in New Jersey. So, it's really, really scary. And when you think about how cheap it is, and when you think about what happens to people who begin to use it, you see the concerns that we have as treatment providers with heroin. And it is a different molecule. Though it breaks down in the body to morphine, long-term opiate addicts given a dose of morphine or a dose of heroin will know the difference and prefer the heroin. Heroin has a special form of morphine. It's diacetylmorphine. And it has a component called 6-AM, which we actually look for as a marker for heroin in drug screens. Now, this 6-AM does not last very long. It lasts just seconds, but it gets into the brain extremely quickly and gives it that high. So the high that people are getting from heroin is more intense and more potent than the morphine, which it breaks down to a little while later. So it's this particular substance that makes the heroin so powerfully euphoric and so powerfully addicting. And as we know, when we look at our drug screens, we will very occasionally, see 6 a.m. It doesn't usually stay in the drug screen more than 2 or 3 hours. So it's pretty rare, even when someone's regularly using heroin, for us to actually see it. But that's the chemical that gets into the system so quickly. And it's frightening.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about that portion of it, about the chemical aspects of heroin and what makes it different. And in particular, that molecule that gets in the brain so quickly and gives them that little extra bit of euphoria so quickly. Mm-hmm. Because when you think of the insane things that people will do,
yes,
in order to just get that one little moment. We've worked with patients who are on medications specifically designed to block any sort of opioid receptor, and they will talk once they get into recovery and they're talking about what they did. They will talk about having stayed awake until they felt like the medication was out of their system long enough so they could go score and get just a little bit, just one hit, so they'll get that little euphoric state.
Mm-hmm.
Before they have to take their next dose of the blocker. and have it blocked away from them again for the next, 18 hours. And when you are talking to these people and they're describing it, it sounds crazy. It sounds like they're desperately trying to hang on to something, but you don't really get what they're hanging on to until you hear this little chemical description of that 6 a.m. burst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's apparently the thing that makes the difference, and it's the thing that makes people prefer heroin over other opiates. Even when they're delivered IV, even in a blinded study, they know the difference. They can feel the difference. They can tell the difference. You give them morphine, you give them codeine, you give them any of the other drugs, they know the difference. Back in 1895, a German researcher who was working for the Bayer Aspirin Company found this particular chemical. He was trying to look for an alternative to morphine. Back then, all of these were available over the counter, but morphine was used as a cough medicine, but they were having some problems with it because it was addictive. So he was looking for this alternative to morphine, and he added this acetyl group to it and found diacetylmorphine, which is heroin. So it was sold over the counter by Bayer Aspirin Company until I think sometime around 1910. It was sold as a non-addictive cough medicine and as a treatment for morphine addiction, and was actually also used at times to treat to treat alcoholics. So finally, they began to discover that this particular chemical was much more addictive and much more rapidly addictive than any other drug. And so in 1910, they withdrew it from the market. And in 1914, there was the Harrison Drug Act that made cocaine and morphine and heroin a Schedule I substance and made it illegal to possess it outside of very specific research things. So it's really quite scary when you think about it, and when you look at the way that this drug has then been used. It's made from the opium poppy. It's made from the flower. It's natural.
Mm-hmm. All drugs of abuse are natural.
Are natural.
Originally.
Originally. And so it is processed, and 87% of the heroin in this country comes from Afghanistan. There is the area called the Golden Triangle where we see distribution coming through Afghanistan down into Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, and then off to the U.S. Now, interestingly enough, there has now been an increased production of heroin in Mexico. And we're seeing the Mexican cartels now producing not as pure a grade of heroin as that that we're seeing coming out of Afghanistan, but it's commonly called black tar heroin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quicker synthesis, and it actually contains more morphine than heroin. So the black tar heroin that we're seeing from the Mexican cartels coming up into the United States still is relatively popular, still used by a lot of folks, but it has a different ratio of morphine to heroin than does the form that comes out of Afghanistan. So it's becoming much more readily available. Coming from several directions, coming from Asia, coming from Afghanistan, and coming from up from Mexico. So we're seeing this
I'm thinking of this progression. In the late 90s, I mm-hmm. believe, that your friend Dr. Powell went to China uh-huh. and was asked to come help them deal with their heroin problem.
Right.
And when our good friend Lois Purrington went with a group over to China to help them begin addressing the heroin problem, and in the Russian military began having huge heroin problems mm-hmm. during that same time when they were at war with Afghanistan.
Right.
And now that we've taken their place and we've decided to go to war there and create the same drama, now it's moving to our shores as well.
And it's really frightening. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime put out a report in 2008 talking about the physical harm that comes from using drugs and alcohol. And they have this relatively famous chart that we talk about what's more on the one of the axes. I can't remember the X and the Y. Anybody here know those? The perpendicular to the Earth axis is how dependent, how addictive is the substance, and the horizontal axis is talking about physical harm. And it looks at all kinds of drugs, everything from tobacco and alcohol to anabolic steroids, and of course in the far upper right-hand corner, the most addictive and the one that causes the most physical harm is heroin. And this was published in the Lancet journal shortly after this study was done. And truly we see that the trajectory for a heroin addict is not that long if they don't get into treatment, because the risks involved in using, the physical damage that it does to their body, and then the fact that they have to keep using more and more until they get to these doses that are very close to the lethal, and people die. So getting treatment for someone who has a heroin addiction is extremely important and is also very challenging, very, very challenging. So we've got a lot more concerns about where these drugs are coming from, the cheapness of these drugs, as you say, the one-stop shopping from the drug dealers who are able to provide a wide variety of drugs on any given day. And then the decreased stigma that we're seeing, unfortunately, among young people as to how dangerous this drug is. And
the confusion, I think, for family members and loved ones at recognizing it. Because for a lot of them, what they see is somebody who's very high functioning and getting a lot done and very active, or a complete jerk. And
right.
An idiot. And so you don't want to talk to the one who's being a complete jerk, and you blame that on addiction. That's when they don't actually have any chemicals in their system. And this really great kind of cool person that you kind of want to have around you when they're using. So it becomes a confusing state for everybody.
And families do often miss the common signs and symptoms of when someone is actively using. And as you say, when someone is in withdrawal. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what are the signs and symptoms to look for and what can be done to help these folks. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Thanks for listening.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Hi, I'm Paisley McDonald, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my show, At Home with Paisley, every week, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, for practical advice and stylish living for your home and office.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction, and we're talking about heroin today. I thought that it would be a good thing to do at this point, David, to talk a little bit about what are some of the signs of someone using heroin, and what are some of the signs of somebody being in withdrawal? Because I think your point right before the break was really important, and that is we don't always recognize when someone is under the influence, and we may actually think that's when they're being normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people can become very, very confused by their loved ones who have an opiate mm-hmm. and heroin addiction because when the drug is still working for them, they can be very, very productive. They mm-hmm. can actually lead a really normal-looking life. They can have a very, very clean house and be energetic and be very happy and fun to be around. But when the drug begins to wear off, like the alcoholic, mm-hmm. when the alcoholic gets drunk, then you see Jekyll come out and the nightmare starts. But for the opiate addict, when the drug is going away, their mean side comes out. They start getting initially really short and snappy with people. Mm-hmm. They start just kind of giving glares to people. They start becoming blaming. And the person that you don't want to be around is the person who's coming off of the opiates and going into the withdrawal state. So that's when family members will say, what's wrong with you? Have you been using whatever? And they will have missed the time period.
Right.
When the addiction is progressing and they're losing control over the amount that they use, then you get the signs because they'll start having the nods.
Right.
They'll start kind of just being at the end of the table and nodding out. And family members tend to recognize that. But they'll also mistake that as this person is getting sick or this person is mm-hmm. overdoing it and they've
right.
just been so busy and now they're tired and they need to go take a nap. As the person continues in withdrawal, though, they begin really having pain.
Yes.
It'll real often starts with lower back pain,
mm-hmm.
Muscles kind of cramping, they're entering a state where their brain is focused solely on getting the next fix.
Right.
Pretty much they'll tell you when the back pain happens, they know they're going to find something to stop this or they're going to be in full-fledged withdrawal.
Exactly. So when someone is under the influence, one of the things that you can look at is their eyes. And when someone has been using heroin or other opiates, their pupils become so small. So the colored part of their eyes are really big and you can hardly see the pupils. Their respiration rate goes down. They start breathing much more slowly and less frequently. Their body temperature goes down. They may be cool to the touch. They may want to have blankets and sweaters. And it's the middle of the summer. Why are you wrapping up? Someone who is actively using an opiate or heroin will be very, very cold. They sometimes have urinary retention. They can't urinate. Sometimes they will be very constipated. And their heart rate is really, really slow. And their blood pressure is low. So that's what somebody looks like when they're actively under the influence. And then they may also be nodding off, like you say, or they may be really euphoric and in their happy place.
And part of what's so dangerous is that family members that are living with addiction we'll get used to seeing that.
Yes.
And what they're not really recognizing is that those are also symptoms of somebody who's in an overdose.
Right.
And could be about to die.
Right. That respiratory depression that we're seeing, that's what's killing people, is they just stop breathing. And if you are around somebody that is beginning to look like this and is nodding off and then difficult to arouse and then stops breathing, they need life support. I mean, this is someone who's gone into a complete overdose and may be dying.
Full-fledged medical emergency.
Yes.
And what they're saying in the articles about this new substance, the black tar and the fentanyl, I mean the heroin fentanyl, is that it gets them to that place before their needle is even out of their arm.
Right.
That it is putting them into respiratory distress.
Right.
Almost instantaneously.
Right. And then this really is a 911 call. Some states are talking about distributing naltrexone, which is a reversing agent, which will bring them immediately right out of their stupor, but will also put them in serious withdrawal, which we'll talk about in a second. But many police officers, many fire people, many emergency responders will have this medication available. So it really is important. If you think someone is overdosing, don't wonder. It's a 911 call. And like you say, with this new combination, this Theraflu that we're seeing.
Butt ice.
These folks are dying, as did Mr. Hoffman, allegedly, with the needle still in their arm. Mm-hmm. They're not even able to finish their injection, and they're dead. So this is a real, a serious emergency, and people need to be aware of that. When people start to go in withdrawal, as you said, one of the things that we'll see is this back pain. And it's back pain in people who don't normally have back pain. Now, if you have back pain, then it's really bad. But there are a number of symptoms. And look, going back to the eyes again, what you'll see is the pupils really dilated when someone's going into withdrawal. So the pupil, now their eyes will look almost black. And the colored part of their eye is just a very thin edge around the outside of the eye. They'll start to have a runny nose. Very common for people to have really runny noses. And it's not allergies and it's not cold. It's withdrawal.
I believe you refer to it sometimes as the law of opposites.
Yes.
The opposite of what the drug is doing for you when you're mm-hmm. using it is what you experience in withdrawal.
Right.
So for the alcoholic, that they're getting the central nervous system depressant, they're getting relaxed and disinhibited, and suddenly they're going into withdrawal, everything's getting excited and overfiring.
Right.
The same thing is happening with the opiate addict.
Exactly. So their blood pressure goes up, their heart rate goes up, their body temperature will go up. They'll be sweating. They'll have chills. They have nausea. They have vomiting. They have goosebumps. And they yawn. They yawn a lot. So, and they're irritable and they're agitated. They have to keep moving. They can't get comfortable. So someone in opiate withdrawal, though not life-threatening, is certainly uncomfortable. It's also a point at which many people can be motivated into treatment. So if you as a family member notice somebody having these symptoms and they're constantly asking you for the Imodium and the Pepto-Bismol and
something for their back pain.
Yes. Then this might be a very opportune time to ask for an intervention and at least an addiction assessment to see if they are actively.
I think that so many family members get very, very frustrated at this stage because mm-hmm. they'll have a willing family member who wants to get help. And so often they'll pick up the phone and they'll call local treatment centers, and they'll get told that message that you just said, that this is not life-threatening. They're going to feel like they're having a really bad flu, but they're not in any sort of medical emergency, so just relax and go to bed and come back to outpatient in 3 days or 5 days, and we'll go from there. And they're not being given any sort of support for the recovery process. And with opiate and with Lortab, I mean, with heroin in particular, their ability to get through the withdrawal is minuscule.
Right.
The percentage of people who can live through withdrawal and not go back to using, not that they're going to die, but they're going to go back to using, which for many of them does result in an overdose and death, is I don't know the number. It's not coming to my head right now, but it's very, very small.
Right.
And so they in particular need some medication-assisted recovery. Some of them, it's just an early process to get them through the withdrawal. Mm-hmm. But some of them, they really need ongoing medication assistance to block the cravings and to block the ability to use opiates in order to put together long-term recovery.
Exactly. And as my friend Dr. Publicker was talking in his op-ed piece, if someone's in acute opiate withdrawal, most of the time the insurance company will not pay for them to be hospitalized, will not pay for them to be in treatment, and won't pay for the medications that can be so helpful, whether that's buprenorphine, whether that's naltrexone, whether that's clonidine. There's a lot of things that can be given immediately to get these folks out of their symptoms of withdrawal, help them feel more comfortable, and get them engaged in treatment. And it's becoming harder and harder for people to be able to do this. So we have promised in the past to get our part two of our medication-assisted recovery, and we'll be talking about that more in depth next week. But I think it is important to realize that addiction is a very treatable illness. Heroin addiction can be devastating, but people can get well, people can get healthy, and there is hope, and there are medications and therapies that can be extremely helpful. So if you have a family member that you're worried about, give us a call at the Atlanta Healing Center. We'll be happy to help you find some help, and we'll also be happy to help support you as your loved one and your family goes through recovery. I'd like to thank you all for listening. I appreciate you being here today, David.
Thank you for having me again. It's been very, very interesting.
And we'll see you again next week on Detailing Addiction.